Okay, Proverbs 2:16. So we just got done looking at the evil man. We looked at a few verses describing evil men and learning here from Solomon how wisdom will help us to avoid them. And now we go over to the fairer sex. We go to the, she's not fairer though, but the strange woman. She's of the opposite sex anyway. We'll put it that way. Proverbs 2:16. It says, to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words. So it'll save us from bad men and bad women, both. Now let's see what a strange woman is. So I'll give you the definitions here, but basically a strange woman is a fornicatrice. Anybody know what a fornicatrice is?
A woman that has sex with whoever.
Yeah, a female fornicator. Yeah.
Outside of marriage.
Outside of marriage, right. Yep. A female fornicator, in essence. So it's a fornicatrice or a prostitute. And I think a lot of people, when they read through here in some of these verses in Proverbs, especially in 5, 6, and 7, and they think, Proverbs 7 especially, they would think about a prostitute. But, you know, Proverbs 7 is not even describing a prostitute. This woman's married, right? She's not... She's not taking money from him or anything. She's practically begging him. So she's not a prostitute. So strange women can be prostitutes, but primarily that's not what they are. And I'll define the terms here. So strange, when used in the phrase strange woman, means a harlot. That's a definition right out of the OED. Strange means foreign is what that means. But when you go down to the phrase strange woman, it's a harlot. A harlot is, when it's applied to a woman, as a general term of execration, specifically an unchaste woman, a prostitute, a strumpet. And then it actually cites the AV 1611 here as examples of using that phrase, strange woman. It's used in the Bible quite a bit. So a harlot is an unchaste woman. Unchaste means not chaste, lacking chastity, impure, lascivious. So if a harlot's unchaste, unchaste is not chaste, chaste is pure from lawful sexual intercourse, incontinent, or virtuous. Now we're finally getting down to a definition here. So a harlot is a woman that is not pure from unlawful sexual intercourse. In other words, she is defiled with unlawful sexual intercourse. Lasciviousness, or lascivious, because an unchaste woman is lascivious. Lascivious is inclined to lust, lewd, wanton. So a harlot is one that is not pure from unlawful sexual intercourse. So we have to find out then what unlawful sexual intercourse is, because this world would tell us it's one thing, and the Bible certainly is going to tell us it's another. So according to the Bible, God's law, unlawful sexual intercourse is fornication and adultery. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18. 1 Corinthians 6:18. It's a real simple one. Real simple verse, at least the first part of it. Flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. Okay, so that's clearly forbidden by God. Fornication is defined as voluntary sexual intercourse between a man in restricted use, an unmarried man, and an unmarried woman in Scripture extended to adultery. So fornication is whenever a man has sex with a woman he's not married to, right? Whether he's married or whether he's not, and it would go the other way around with a woman as well. So when two people are having sexual intercourse and they're not married to each other, it's fornication. Could also be adultery if one of them's married, but it's definitely fornication. All adultery is fornication, but not all fornication is adultery. Think about that for a second and you'll get it. Look at Hebrews 13 and verse 4. So fornication and adultery, these are the two forms, well, these are two of the forms of unlawful sexual intercourse. Of course, you have sodomy as well, which is just a specific of fornication, right? It still falls under the umbrella of fornication. Hebrews 13 and verse 4 says, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. So a whoremonger is one who commits fornication, right? So people that do that are under God's judgment, and therefore that is what the Bible terms unlawful sexual intercourse. So a woman that engages in either of those things, fornication or adultery, is therefore a harlot by definition, which is a strange woman. Now we think of a harlot as a prostitute, but a harlot is not only a prostitute. A harlot is any woman that that does these things. So a strange woman is not merely a prostitute, but she is also a woman who offers the same service free of charge to boyfriends or other men whom she dates. All right, so it doesn't matter if you're getting paid for it or not, you're still a harlot. And if you're a man, you're still a whoremonger. Now here's a little interesting statistic for you. This is according to a study that was completed by the Guttmacher, I think that's how you pronounce that, Guttmacher Institute. And it found that 95% of people, 94% of women, and 96% of men, by age 44, have had premarital sex. 95% of people by age 44. That could include people that had been divorced and then did it before they were remarried again, I suppose, but because that would still be fornication in that case. But anyway, 95%, that's darn near everybody. So therefore, by biblical definition, I notice it hurt a lot of feelings, but whatever, it's true. By biblical definition, 94% of women are, or were at one time in their lives, strange women, and 96% of men are, or were at one time in their lives, whoremongers. And that's a fact. That is a fact. So with these appalling figures in this wicked and perverse generation, the need for wisdom which will deliver the godly young man from the strange woman is as crucial as ever. Because let me tell you what, there are a lot more strange women running around now than when Solomon wrote his epistle or his Proverbs, that's for sure. I mean, granted, this sin is as old as, you know, humanity, but people used to have a little bit more decency, and at least because of social norms, even though probably a lot of them weren't regenerate anyway, but social norms kept people from doing this kind of thing. Even just a couple generations ago, social norms kept people from doing this kind of thing. But nowadays, 95% of people. That's well, unbelievable.
In the 70s, we had a girl get pregnant in high school, and that was horrible. She almost got kicked out of school, but that didn't matter at all.
Right, yeah. Yeah, she'd go off to, I mean, I don't know, when you were a kid, did they send them off somewhere to disappear for 9 months?
And no, they would still be in high school, but they was all, now I don't want anything to do with her, and she
yeah.
was pregnant. And,
yeah.
Know. But now it didn't matter, it didn't seem like it mattered at all.
Yeah, no. The kid, I mean,
40 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, lots changed in that relatively short period of time. You had something to do?
Is this 94% including the biblical definition of you're still married until either death or the two reasons why, or is this just what we call now premarital sex?
I assume it's what people call now premarital sex. Yeah, that people, before they say I do, they're doing it, right? Yeah. So, yeah, 95%. By age 44, that's really something. So the fact that wisdom is necessary to deliver a man from a strange woman means that she's both dangerous and subtle. Because if you need wisdom to be delivered from something, that means that something is pretty crafty, right? Because otherwise it'd be totally obvious and anybody could figure it out, right? So if you have to have wisdom, she's probably pretty tricky. Now, women are the weaker vessel, we're told in 1 Peter 3:7. And we don't need to go there. We've been there many times before, but Peter refers to him as the weaker vessel. But nevertheless, they wield great power over men. It is really something, right? Because they are physically much less strong than a man, but they have power that they can control men, especially weak men, quite easily.
We talked about before that David sinned because of a woman. Mm-hmm. Adam sinned because of a woman. Solomon, all the great men basically fell because of a woman.
That's exactly right. Thanks for taking the next half of my outline here. No, that's fine. That's it is precisely the next point. So you're absolutely right. And I won't go to all these verses, but yeah, you're exactly right. Let's look at some of the great men in the Bible, and I'm just going to make reference to all these. But you got three of them. There's one more. You want to go ahead? Samson, there we go. Okay, so now my thunder has been completely stolen. Okay, so we'll start in the beginning. Adam. So here is a sinless man, right? A perfect man. And the Bible says in 1 Timothy 2:14, he was not deceived, okay? Not deceived by the devil, but nonetheless, he was talked into sinning against God when he, quote, hearkened unto the voice of his wife, or thy wife, in Genesis 3:17. And by doing that, he destroyed the entire human race, right? And so we can blame Eve for it, but ultimately, I mean, the buck stops with Adam. It was his fault, right? But still, the method, the means by which the devil got to Adam was through his wife, was through a woman. And it was through his love of his wife. It's really something. Then, of course, we have Solomon. So we got Adam, the purest, most righteous man that ever lived, sinless man at that time. Then we have Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. And we've already read these before in 1 Kings 4:30 and 31. It says he was wiser than all men, except for Jesus Christ, of course. A greater than Solomon is here, Jesus said in Matthew 12:42. But, as it says in Nehemiah 13:26, nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. Foreign women. You could say strange women in the natural sense. They were strange, like they were foreign from not around there, from not that nation. Women that worshipped other gods, and they turned his heart away and turned him to serve their gods. And sadly, if Solomon would have listened to the very counsel that he penned down in his own Proverbs, he would have been delivered from that. If he'd have listened to the counsel that he gave his son, and if he would have listened to the counsel that his mother gave him. Because remember what his mother said to him in Proverbs 31 and verse 3? My son, give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. His mother knew the power of a woman. You know why she knew that? Because she was Bathsheba. Now, in her case, she was the one that was seduced, but she fully understands the power that a woman has over a man and what men will do whenever enticed by a woman. And then we have Samson. So we have the most righteous man that ever lived. We have the wisest man that ever lived. Now Samson, the strongest man. And he had exceeding strength. In Judges 15:15, it tells us that he killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass. You know how much strength that would take? I mean, just imagine getting into a fight. You ever get into a fight with anybody, like one-on-one fight, and after a couple minutes, you're so worn out, you can hardly go anymore. I remember when I first started driving the bus, and I asked, what happens if they get into a fight? He said, just let them fight. And I said, well, like, what if they're just, you know, like on top of each other, and one's just totally destroying the other one? And the guy said, they don't have that much strength. They don't have that much energy. You just wear out after a while. And he just said, just let them fight. And I think he's right, because it really does wear you out. Imagine killing 1,000 people with a jawbone of an ass. And I'm assuming these guys weren't just standing there waiting to be slain with a jawbone. They probably had swords or were, you know, defending themselves. This is a pretty strong guy. And yet he was brought down by the antics of a sly woman. You remember his wife? She wanted to know where his strength came from. The Philistines wanted to know where his strength came from. And he kept telling her, she kept asking, he kept telling her things that weren't true, this thing and that thing. And if you bind me with cords and if you do this and that. And then he finally told her, because she nagged and nagged and nagged and nagged. And he just got tired of it. And he told her, it's my hair. Cut my hair off. I'm just like any other man. And she cut his hair off. Said, the Philistines have come for you. And he couldn't get out of it that time. And they came and plucked out his eyeballs. And so anyway, there you go. Strongest man. He could slay 1,000 Philistines, but he couldn't turn down his wife when she wanted him to do something wrong or tell her something wrong. And then you have David. And David was, according to Acts 13:22, and where it's quoted from the Old Testament, a man after God's own heart. So you got a righteous man, you got a wise man, you got a strong man, and then you got just a good man, a man after God's own heart. And yet, his lust for a beautiful woman led him to commit adultery with her, 2 Samuel 11:2-4, and to murder her husband to cover it up. 2 Samuel 11:14-17. That was Bathsheba and Uriah. So in all these cases, a woman was used to bring down a man.
There's one more that we forgot.
What's that one?
That brought down John the Baptist, got his head cut off.
That's true. Herodias. Yeah. Wicked woman. Now, in that case, she didn't do anything to tempt John to get himself in trouble, but yet, well, and really, think about it, it was Herodias' daughter that danced, did a little belly dance in front of Herod and got him all excited, and then he foolishly says, I'll give you anything up to half the kingdom, and she's already been instructed of her mother, and she says, I want John the Baptist's head in a charger.
You got two women right there.
Yeah.
The daughter and the mother.
Conspiring. I know, it's terrible. Yeah. There are times when it's okay to break an oath. Whenever you make a stupid oath, and that oath would result in the death of an innocent man, it's time to break the oath, right? Just like, I think it was Jephthah, with his daughter, and he makes this dumb oath, and I don't remember why, I can't remember right now why he made the oath. I think if the Lord gave him victory in the battle, or something like that, yeah, that he would sacrifice the first thing that came out of his door. What was he like, have a pen of sheep in his house or what? I mean, what's he thinking? What's the first thing going to come out of your door when you come home? The dog? I mean, well, his daughter comes out. He says, oh, I've got to do it. She goes and bewails her virginity for 3 months, I think it was, up in the mountains. And then he sacrificed her. That was wrong. He should not have kept that oath. God's law is in a hierarchy, remember, and it's better to save life than to destroy. So given the fact that women, whether wittingly or unwittingly, have great power over even the best of men, from a sinless man to the wisest man, from the strongest man to the godliest man, it is of the gravest importance for a Christian man to get wisdom, Proverbs 4:5, from the word of God, which will deliver him from the strange woman, verse 16, like we're looking at right now. Fathers, you want to be careful and teach your children, teach your sons these things. When Braden gets older, teach him these things. Go through Proverbs 5, 6, and 7 with him and warn him about the tactics and the antics of strange women. And likewise, warn your daughters of the same thing, because there's plenty of lascivious pigs out there that, I mean, chances are they're going to be the ones that are preyed upon more than the sons, right? Everybody, men and women, need to hear these things.
I don't think that's true.
You don't think so?
Especially
strange woman goes after the precious flood, the
precious
soul. Yeah.
But if you look at, in especially teenagers, the teenage girls are unbelievably bold and lustful, and I mean, I saw some really disgusting things that teenage girls did. And
when you've got a young man that's been raised in the church and is maybe even baptized, then the devil will make, I believe, young women go after him, because it's not just some guy. It's that young man is a target.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So,
Look at how the young girls are dressing now.
Oh, yeah.
If that's an invitation for the guy to sin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a temptation.
It is.
Sins without touching her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know if women understand that and dress that way anyway, they're wicked. I think a lot of times they're ignorant and they probably don't realize, but
I think most of the time women that a common girl or a common young woman doesn't know the power she has over a guy.
Oh yeah.
Wives do, so I don't think other women have no idea what that involves.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They don't think like women. Don't think like men do.
No, they don't.
And their mothers don't teach them.
No. And their fathers. Goodness, I've seen.
Their fathers don't teach them either.
Yeah.
My father tried to teach me, and my mother interfered.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah, it was bad.
I see the way these little girls are dressed, and it just makes me sick. I still remember at the homecoming last year, watching this girl walk down across the field with her dad escorting her in this dress that was so tight. I mean, she had to take like 6-inch steps because she couldn't even move her legs. The dress was so tight. And basically, she may as well not have been wearing anything. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And I just thought, what a weak, pathetic, stupid man you are to let your daughter wear something like that and walk beside her. I just couldn't believe it.
Well,
but anyway.
The stigma has changed so much recently.
Yeah.
I would have worn a bathing suit just like you would have seen on kids that shouldn't be allowed anymore, thinking parade in front of who knows who and not see anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
But now my eyes are opened.
Right.
And I wouldn't be caught dead doing that because it is no more than a bra and panties.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people have been, women have been deceived. They don't, for some reason, if you're swimming, things are totally different. Like things that you wouldn't, could be caught dead in outside. If you're swimming, it's okay. It's strange.
It affects the guy the same way.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And then the second half of the verse. The stranger which flattereth with her words. So this is the primary weapon of the strange woman is flattery. This kind of goes back to what Bev was telling us about earlier with these young ladies. To flatter is primarily, first of all, the first definition, of an animal or bird, etc. It is to show delight or fondness by wagging the tail, making a caressing sound, etc. Then number two is to try to please or win the favor of a person by obsequious speech or conduct, to court, fawn upon. So to fawn is to, when we're talking about of an animal here again, of an animal, especially a dog, to show delight or fondness by wagging the tail, whining, etc., as a dog does. To fawn upon means to show delight at the presence of, to lavish caresses on, to caress. So let me tell you something, man. If a woman you just met is acting like your dog whenever you walk in the door after being gone all day, and she's just all excited and tail wagging and jumping up and down to see you, chances are you better run, right? Because you ain't that great. And if you got a woman that's acting like that, she's probably up to no good. The young man should beware of the woman who showers him with high praise, for the woman who does so spreads a net for his feet. Remember, that's why people flatter other people, because they want to catch them. When you flatter somebody, like, for instance, why did I come in today and tell Judy that she was my favorite church member, right?
Did she bake you apple pie?
No, she didn't, but I she gave me ice cream, and I broke her container trying to get it out because it was frozen so hard.
I thought you said because it was weak.
It was weak, and I was too strong for it. But anyway, so, yeah. But that's what I, you know, I told her she's my favorite church member. I really appreciate all you do for me. It's just, you're so wonderful. For some reason, she was on to me. She figured it out right away.
What did you do?
Yeah. Or what do you want?
I thought he wanted something.
Yeah. Proverbs 29 and verse 5. It says, a man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. So it's always a good thing to know yourself and to have a good estimation of what you really are. And when somebody starts telling you things about yourself that are way out of line, that aren't even close to being true, you can pretty well figure they're trying to get something out of me. They're trying to get on my good side and, you know, they're doing something that's probably not right. Now, Proverbs 7 describes in fine detail the way of a strange woman, which verse 7 says, or verse 5 of Proverbs 7 says, which flattereth with her words. And we're just going to walk through this here just real quickly. And I'm going to show you here the way of a strange woman. Proverbs chapter 7 is a commentary here on these verses in Proverbs chapter 2 about such women. Verse 5, it says that they may keep thee, that is the words of understanding, that they may keep thee from the strange woman which flattereth with her words. This is the second place that it talks about that. So we see, first of all, she preys on young men that are simple and void of understanding who wander in darkness. Verses 6 through 9. It says, for at the window of my house I looked through my casement and beheld among the simple ones I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house in the twilight and the evening and the black and dark night. Okay, so first of all, he's simple and void of understanding. He hasn't been reading his Bible. He hasn't been learning. He is a stupid fool. That's his first problem. Secondly, he's walking around places where he shouldn't be. He's passing by her corner, went the way to her house. He has no business being there. Thirdly, he's doing it at the wrong time. He's going out late at night, walking places where he shouldn't be, and he doesn't have enough sense to realize what he's about ready to get himself into. So as somebody that I watch on YouTube every now and again, the self-defense channel. He says, don't do stupid things with stupid people at stupid times, right? And if you follow those three rules, you will avoid a lot of trouble. So then we see that the strange woman here dresses with the attire of an harlot. Verse 10. It says, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. You see, harlots, prostitutes, have a uniform, right? And whenever women dress like harlots do, what do they expect to be treated like? Right? When you're dressing, showing cleavage in the bottom of your butt cheeks because your shorts are so short, is it any wonder that men treat you like you're a prostitute?
So during this time, they were dressed like that?
I don't know what a prostitute dressed like in these days, but whatever she did, I'm sure she was revealing her desirable parts, right? Who knows? She might not have looked half as bad as women at the mall look these days. I don't know what they looked like in those days. But whatever she was doing was accentuating those parts that are attractive to men, obviously. She is subtle of heart, so she's tricky. She's crafty. That's why you have to have wisdom to identify and avoid her. Now, unlike godly women that are of a meek and quiet spirit, 1 Peter 3:4, and her keepers at home, Titus 2:5, she's rather loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. She's not at home. She's out running around. You know, she's out up to no good. Proverbs 7 and verse 11, she's loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. And what's she doing out at that hour of the night anyway? Right? It's in the twilight. Black and dark night. She ought to be at home sleeping or getting ready for bed or something. She was getting ready for bed, but not by herself. Then she lies in wait for him, catching and seducing him. Verses 12 through 13. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. See, she's not a whore, she's not a hooker, but she's acting like it. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. We'll get to that in a second. So she's out. She's lying in wait. You know, we're told about false teachers. They lie in wait to deceive. And it's interesting. You can take a lot of the things that are said about the strange woman and apply it to false religion. There's a real correlation there. The Lord refers to idolatry and false religion as fornication and adultery in the Bible as well. So there are definitely parallels here. So then she catches him and seduces him. She caught him and kissed him with an impudent face, said unto him. So if you have a woman and the first thing that she does when you see her is she grabs a hold of you and kisses you, it's time to get out of there. This is not a good woman, right? Now that may sound all enticing and exciting to some single guy or maybe to some married guy for that matter. But you know what? You better run if something like that happens because that is a bad woman. Most women at least have enough discretion to wait. Then she feigns religion to appeal to his spiritual side. Look at verses 14 and 15. I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Well, Mom always told me to find a girl that goes to church. I've got peace offerings, right? That was part of the law of Moses, right? The peace offering. I go to church late. What church do you go to? I'm taking my offerings down here to the altar. Therefore came I forth diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I've been looking for a good Christian man just like you. We can go to church together. After we get done, you know, up in my bed that I prefer him with Morales and cinnamon. Just because a girl tells you she's a Christian, don't necessarily believe her. Especially if she grabs you and lays a big one on you, right? You can pretty well figure, she's probably not. Not what she's all cracked up to be here. Then she tempts him with talk of her finely adorned bed. Verses 16 and 17. I've decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. So if the kiss wasn't enough to know that, you know what, this woman is probably not exactly chaste, all the talk about her bed might be an indicator like, you know, she's probably not wanting me to just to see the architecture of it, you know, just to admire the craftsmanship. Talk about a young man void of understanding. Oh, she seems like a nice girl to me. I don't know. I mean, she does have peace offerings. Crazy. She allures him with the suggestion of lovemaking, assuring him that her husband is gone and will not come home for a great while. Now, if you haven't figured it out yet, this would probably be the time. If you haven't run yet, it's time to get out. Verses 18 through 20. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves, for the goodman is not at home. That's another name for a husband. He has gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. Now, any decent guy, any man, should know at that point, well, not only is this woman a fornicator, not only is she a strange woman, she's an adulteress. And that's a heinous crime, the Bible says. And whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. But look what happens. She finally ends up enticing him with her fair speech. Verse 21. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. Remember what she said to him? She said, where'd she say diligently? Yeah, verse 15. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I found thee. I've been looking for you, for a guy just like you. I am so thankful God put us together. God brought us on this path together. You just happened to be out here walking. I just happened to be out here walking, and look what happened. I was on my way to church. I got these peace offerings right now. This is amazing. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. See, she didn't have strong muscle. She didn't have weaponry. She didn't have anything like that. She couldn't force him into that filthy bed. But with her words, with her flattering words, she made him feel good, made him feel special. That's how they do it. And men can do the same exact thing. They know what to tell a woman to make her feel good, to make her feel special, and to make her give in. She's like the ones that Paul talked about in a different context when he says, by good words and fair speeches, they deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16 and verse 18. Good words and fair speeches. Now this strange woman, her lips drop as an honeycomb and her mouth is smoother than oil. Look at Proverbs 5 and verse 3. Proverbs 5, 3. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb and her mouth is smoother than oil. Listen to her. Remember the things that she said? Diligently to seek thy face. I have found thee. I've got peace offerings with me and so on. My bed is decked with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Right? Smoother than oil. All sounds really good.
I wonder what that meant before, how her lips drop. I guess it's the words she drops.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me drop you. Let me drop a word.
Yeah.
It's what she's saying.
Well, and like a honeycomb, when the oil drops off the honeycomb, and oil is sweet. Right, so it's just sweetness is dripping off of her lips.
Oil is sweet.
Honey is sweet. But her mouth is not sweet. It is a deep pit, and he that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. Proverbs 22 and verse 14. Proverbs 22:14. The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. He that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. That tells me, that says, that people that God, men that God hate, end up falling into the trap of the strange woman. So I wouldn't want to be there. I wouldn't want to have to stand before God or before the church, having fallen into the arms of a strange woman, knowing that this verse says that people that God hates, that's what happens to them. I wouldn't want to be there. And then as the following verses show, I'm going to read these ones. We're going to see that being delivered from this strange woman which flatters with her lips is deadly serious. Let me just give you a string of verses here. Proverbs 2:18 through 19. We'll get to these here in the next week or so. Proverbs 2:18 and 19. It says, for her house, this is the strange woman, inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. Proverbs 5:20 through 23. This is deadly. And it could be deadly for several reasons. I'll get into that later on in this study. I'll show you all the reasons, all the ways you could die going to a strange woman. And there are many of them. Proverbs 5:20 through 23. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? Ravished means carried away by force, violated, ravished. So when you're ravished with a strange woman, she doesn't physically force you, right? Because most women can't physically force a man. But through her words and through her sex appeal, she can drag you away. And any man, any married man knows what that's like. I mean, there is a point of no return, right? When things start to happen and they're not going to stop, right? And unfortunately, that happens before marriage too, and you got to be really careful about that. Verse 21, for the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction in the greatness of his folly, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. There's death again. Proverbs 6, 32 through 33. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. That's one of the ways you can die, the jealous husband that comes after you. And lastly, Proverbs 7, 22 through 27, to finish up the chapter that we're looking at. This is that foolish young man again. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. That silly old ox, he didn't know where he's going. They're just leading him along, and little does he know, he is walking to death row. He's walking to his death, and he doesn't know it. And that young man was doing the exact same thing. Till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline from her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. The wages of sin is death. God's not lying when he said that. So we all want to be very careful, married and single alike, to stay away from the way of the strange woman. Next time we'll start with Proverbs 2:17, Lord willing.